Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It's Synth Week Live, everyone.
Is it really the home of synth?
Düsseldorf, I would have gone with.
We don't have enough trouble in this place.
That banging new intro tune can mean only one thing. It's Synth Week Live from Berlin. We're podcasting today from around a very large wooden table in the middle of a nice loft-style apartment in the Moabit area of Berlin, which is north of Tiergarten Park, part of the Mitte Borough, apparently. Did Mark Horgan accidentally book us in here thinking we were staying in a different Mitte, which is way closer to the action? Listen, maybe he did, but the lad's got a lot in his mind between Synth Week and the Pre-Europa Awards. Which is the
now is not the time. Now is not the time for that sort of petty name-calling.
People go on about East Berlin and West Berlin, but you never hear people talk about North Berlin.
Yeah, we're going to give North Berlin a rattle this week.
Guys, we're sitting in the same room
together. I can see you on
it. It's been about 18 months. We've barely sat in the same room together. And now we're going to be spending 5 days in an apartment, working, living, and sleeping in close quarters.
I think that's fine.
You sure?
Well, talk to me on Friday.
Mark is currently in Potsdam, where the awards are on all week. So he's doing some hardcore networking with the movers and shakers on the European media scene. It's a bit like, do you remember the Succession episode, Argestes? Where the Roys go to this big media retreat. Mark is like Logan Roy out there in the thick of the action, talking hostile takeovers.
So we're like Logan Roy, is it?
Yeah, we're Tom Wamsgans invited along just to hang around the periphery. You know, we're doing the walking tours and so on with the
my lanyard doesn't get me into all the good parties.
Other media organizations. Ken, you've been out on a run already. You're absolute legend.
Yeah, I have. Haven't you? I thought you were going to come with me, but for some reason the first thing you did was have a shower. Well, not quite the first thing, but you did have a shower. And
Ken honestly looked at me with such disappointment. He's like, "I thought, did you just have a shower there?" I was like, "Yeah, is that okay?" I thought we were going on a run. And I was like, "I just have a couple of."
I'm gonna be straight with you. I was fine with Ken just like saying, "Oh, you know, I'm a runner now," and me, I just presumed that was like he goes for a run once every 3 weeks. I mean, like when everyone says I run, you know, I go for runs now. That's what you actually mean, right?
Yeah, but it was
like, you know, you bought a pair of running shoes. You went three times in a row after you bought the running shoes, and now you go like once a month or something.
Yeah,
but no, it turns out Ken actually is a runner.
Well, it was more about tourism than exercise. I mean, you know, I've already been around Kraftwerk Moabit.
Oh, okay.
Which is the enormous power station. Just up the way.
Sponsored by Kraftwerk.
No, Kraftwerk literally means power station.
No, I'm talking about the band. You don't understand, Ken.
Kraftwerk. No, that's literally,
because I know what
it literally means power plant.
No, I know that. Okay. But what does Kraftwerk mean?
No, it means power plant.
Oh, okay.
So in this instance, we are talking about, like, I assume an electricity generating installation. It's got four big chimneys. It's got a couple of other chimneys besides, but four big black ones.
Okay.
And
The band come in?
The band actually has nothing to do with it.
You don't need to dignify that with a response.
I like this Ken's running tour of Berlin. What else is going on? Just power stations?
You know, like, obviously we're here in North Berlin, which has seldom been, you know, it's let's say, one of the less talked about quarters.
But if we're in North Berlin, it means we're ideally positioned to investigate both West and East Berlin. That's what I love about North Berlin.
It's a gateway to the rest of Berlin.
You know, if you're in West Berlin, it's a real trek to get across to East Berlin. Whereas now, we're like, basically, we can go wherever we please, yeah, as long as it's south.
The banks of the Spree. You know, I ran along the banks of the Spree and through some dark green parks, city parks, graveyards. Chunky apartment buildings.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Could
you feel the synth out there in this city, Berlin, the home of synth? Düsseldorf.
The scooters are all lying around. That's something I'm sort of interested in. You know, they're like electric scooters.
Yeah, yeah. But I went for a walk this morning as well, and it was like...
They're just lying there on the ground. So what's the story with them? Do they work?
Apparently, Mark Horgan has already sampled.
But if it's just lying there, do you need to charge it or...
Ken...
Can you just pick it up?
It's a long week. I think that, you know, once maybe we finish recording today's show, we'll be able to bring...
I haven't been on one of those scooters yet.
No, neither have I. And I'm kind of petrified.
I hate them as well. I hate the scooters.
Yeah.
But...
any mode of transport that isn't a car or Shanksmare, I've no...
Oh, you can't cycle either.
Well, no, I can't.
You can't. You actually can't cycle. You can't cycle.
This is one of these great urban myths. I can cycle. I cycled on Innisfier this summer for the first time, I would say, in about 20 years. Let's just say I had a lot of fun, but I'm not prepared. You know, a horse and cart was all of the traffic I was meeting on in this year. I'm just not entirely sure I'm ready for urban cycling.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but don't try and get me on a scooter. I will walk in my own good time and in any direction that you want me to go.
There is one annoying thing, though, about trying to go for a run here, which is the world-famous German respect for... the traffic lights, the traffic signals. Mm. You know, because realistically, you know, you come to a road, there aren't any cars, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to stop and wait because, you're trying to, keep going. But that's what's happening. You know, well, at least, you know, it wasn't like there was anyone else sort of running or whatever, but they're standing there and I couldn't do it. So
there's
not
a runner's dispensation, no?
I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't like to chance it, you know?
I think we could be all day talking running, guys, but... we're here to talk synth, right? This is brilliant. We're talking synth. Even our doorbell in our apartment sounds kind of synthy. Agreed?
Well, no. I mean, that sounds like an early computer game sound.
Sounds to me like the start of a Kraftwerk song. Well, just don't ask me to name that Kraftwerk song that begins with a doorbell sound.
Yeah, it's vaguely electronic sounding. I mean, it's not your regular bell sound. So, I mean... you know, if you're including electronic music of all kinds into Synth Week, which I think we basically are.
I think we did last time, to be fair.
Yeah,
your own synth entries have been flooding in. Everyone's looking to emulate Fairview Lady early on the dance floor by Owen Murphy during the original Synth Week.
No, sorry. Owen, they're not. They're absolutely not.
Can I just play a little bit of this banger from last time? Fairview Lady,
looking for a dance. He doesn't even listen to the show. When he's not working. I mean, it's disgraceful, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first thing I thought when he was on holidays was that he'd at least have the decency, the respect for us as his colleagues to listen to the show. Fairview Lady was trashed the show. Rightly trashed on the show last week. No, we're all about Mensch by Owen Rua Finn now. Mensch is the bar.
No, I agree with that. Mensch was pretty good.
Mensch is the
bar.
Benchmark. If anyone else thinks they can get up to that standard, well then... get your entries.
The entries are flooding in. Original. We're talking original compositions here. I haven't heard them myself just yet, but I'm told it's a mixed bag so far.
Oh no, you did!
Coming in.
Perhaps as you'd expect.
Editor at secondcaptains.com. We will play. We'll give 4 tickets to the end of year Liberty Hall shows to the best, to the Owen Rua Finn of this year's Synth Week. I mean, Synth Week was only a few weeks ago, but this is Synth Week live in Berlin. We'll announce details of those Liberty Hall shows in due course as well. People are also emailing us in with actual synth tunes to play out the shows this week. So Synth Lord Early here will choose one later on in today's podcast. For any of you Berlin-based Second Captains listeners, we will be doing a live show on Wednesday night at a bar whose name I should have really looked up before. I know. Didn't Mark throw it to Google Translate or something? Let's just do that.
Alter Roter Löwe Rhein, Richardstraße.
Yep, that's the name of the place in Berlin that we're broadcasting from later on in the week on Wednesday evening. Our first batch of tickets sold out straight away, you guys. So there are more second captain's heads knocking around here than we thought.
You legends. Yeah. I don't know who you are, but I'm looking forward to meeting you all.
We're going to meet you all on Wednesday night. We're going to put more tickets on sale tonight at 7 o'clock Irish time. So just go to secondcaptains.com. The first post on the website will tell you what to do there. That's 7 o'clock Irish time. Another batch of tickets for you Berlin second captain's heads. Murph, I see Slippers, no running for you anyway. You've just been sort of hanging around these things.
Well, Owen, what can I tell you? I mean, there's 23 kilograms of free baggage every time you fly with Aer Lingus. So I was looking at my large suitcase yesterday and I decided, why not throw in the slippers? I mean, I even had my dressing gown in. And then I realized, it's not. I had the room, but let's not be wandering around in a dressing gown, you know? I mean, this is a work holiday. A work trip.
Let us not confuse this.
I mean, sure, if there's a couple of drinks, then that's fine, Owen. But the fact of the matter is, we're over here, we're working. I happen to work quite well in my slippers. So if you guys don't mind.
No, I'm happy.
I mean, I've been working in them for the last 18 months.
Did you wear those slippers on the really comfortable, and may I say, very punctual flight that Aer Lingus sent us over onto Berlin? We were out here in style.
Half an hour early. Come on, like, this is ridiculous. Leg room, by the way.
Oh, to die for.
It's like, I'm sitting here thinking, maybe I should have asked for the overwing exit seat. No problem. 6'5", Ken. No problems. You're looking at me like I'm some sort of crazed animal. But this shit's important, Ken.
I got to say, just as well, the Republic of Ireland got their first competitive win under Stephen Kenny when they did, because I was not looking forward to coming out here facing you guys around this table, sitting face to face after another Ireland defeat and refereeing. So luckily, well, you know, we'll see. I think
How close would we have come to blows after the last Azerbaijan?
I don't know.
I don't think I would have punched you, but I mean, I might have pushed you.
I can hear like how angry you are. I can hear how triggered you are. What is it about this?
But maybe it would have been different. I mean, you know, you're sitting there now. I can see you. So maybe
I can't see. Sort of, I can't see your face having like a leavening effect on my attitude during that.
Maybe it sort of humanizes you more as opposed to just hearing this reedy voice at the other end of the line, just saying stupid things. You know. It would be just to see you there would be like, oh, you know, look,
it's a real joy to be broadcasting with you again, Ken, in person.
Shots fired. Dion Fanning of The Currency and The 42's Gavin Cooney coming up later on in this podcast. Right now, Ken, you're going to report on Ireland's resounding 3-0 victory.
Well, I mean, I thought it would be Ciarán who would be doing most of the talking at this point. I thought you'd be doing most of the talking.
It was a very good result, wasn't it?
Well,
I looked up at the scoreboard at the end of the game and I liked what I saw again.
Well, it was it a good performance?
That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Like, the first half was not a particularly good performance, I wouldn't have thought. We went in 2-0 up. Yeah. And then the second half was a much better performance in a lot of ways. Yeah. And up until the last minute, we hadn't actually scored. But
even the second half, I felt kind of nervy at 2-0.
Yes. The penalty VAR check.
Yeah,
oh, no. If you offered me 2-2 right now, Owen, I'd have bit your hand off.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe they didn't give that penalty. Like, I mean, you could see it was the right decision, but I just assumed, we're going to get done here by this. Yeah. Because it's not like looking at VAR means they always make the right decision. I mean, I've just been looking at the Mbappe winning goal of the Nations League. It's just an absolute joke of a decision. And this is like, you know, one that everybody has the option to look at and think about, and then they actually give it. Like, it's not like the people were comparing it to the Harry Kane winning a penalty against Liverpool a couple of seasons ago, where he again was offside, ran onto the through ball, but Dejan Lovren had touched it, and then they said, oh, well, I think Lovren touched it, so Kane's not offside. Mm-hmm. But that was like referee and linesman kind of reconstructing what they thought happened. So like, I thought their decision was wrong, although it can be defended with reference to the rules, but like, this is like them looking at it and just coming to the wrong decision. You know what I mean? And I thought there's something like that was going to happen to Ireland, but they actually noticed that Matt Doherty was having a shirt pulled, so didn't give the penalty, so that was good. I mean, the other question though is, you know, how did you feel about Callum Robinson doing all the damage, you know, given
I did not care. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know,
I mean, I had to, like, obviously laugh at the the madness of the lads' week, obviously.
Yeah, but
Jesus, we are not in a position to be like, well, a good result, but I would have preferred a different score of two of our two first half goals.
Yeah. Now, no, I'm just wondering, because all the tweets that we were getting.
We were getting a lot of tweets.
What were you guys getting?
Basically along the lines of, well,
haha, fuck you.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, I don't know what kind of the lesson we were supposed to have learned here.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, I've changed my mind. Vaccines are actually a bad idea.
I regret getting the vaccine.
Hospital, please. Can you take this out of my body? Yeah. You know, pick up the phone. So I don't know. I don't quite know what the tenor of those messages actually were. Other than that, you were slagging this guy off earlier in the week, and now he scored two goals.
I mean, Joe Duffy was trending during the game. You know, like David Quinn was tweeting about the Ireland football team. Like, when has that happened before? You know,
Joe Duffy had said something like he's got more times than goals.
So now it's 3-2 goals to COVID. So
has the full time whistle been blown on that particular competition? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, you know, I mean, he's established a lead now, and hopefully he can keep those numbers
trending in the right direction.
But, you know, it was interesting that he did the fingers and ears stuff. You know,
the fuck you celebration, as you called it in the Irish Times.
Well, it is. You know, I mean, it's like what else do you call it? You know, I mean, I was thinking of the last time I remember a player doing that was Coutinho. I remember at Barcelona, he scored the goal against Manchester United.
Mm.
And he did that, but that was a badly miscalculated move by Coutinho, because it appeared that he was saying that to his own supporters, as opposed to just the. I guess I don't think Callum Robinson was directing that at the Ireland supporters. 90% of whom are vaccinated.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's different in Callum Robinson's age group. You know, in the UK where he lives. It's only like 50-50, you know, if you're under 30 in terms of vaccine. It's very close to like 50-50.
Wow.
You know, I'm actually not sure what the figure was. So I was trying to look for the figure in Ireland last night, but I assume it's a bit higher, but it wouldn't be like 90%, you know, as it is for the population as a whole. But yeah, I mean, I assume that he was kind of, it was like, oh, the media have been attacking me. And like, you know, I don't know if, have we been too... Is it? I mean, I think this is great. You know, if Callum Robinson's going out there banging in goals, like,
see,
he's a man on a mission.
Yeah.
To, you know, to ram it right up the likes of me and you, then, you know, that's great. You know, I hope to continue getting rammed.
Like, we've been too nice to these players. Like,
it's just we should have the whole thing. You know,
we tried your best with Aaron Connolly last week.
Aaron Connolly, maybe I was dancing around it, you know. Maybe, you know, we've just been too polite, you know, too sort of supportive. It's all just been a little bit too kind of, oh no, you know, we believe in new players, like, please, you know, yeah. As opposed to just like,
you're a disgrace, volcanic
eruption. You're a disgrace. Now, you know, and everyone's jabbing their fingers at each other and sticking their fingers in each other's ears and banging goals into the net. Like, it's just a cathartic sort of release.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what, you know. Like, who's next?
Yeah.
You know, who's next?
Who's next to the Ken Early firing line?
I'm not trying to take credit for it. I thought it's kind of funny that, like, we talk about this issue, right? We both said the same thing, which is that we think it's wrong. It's a wrong decision from Cam Robinson. But we also didn't say, at least I didn't say, that he should be dropped from the squad. You know, I mean, not least because that would involve apparently dropping
a lot of players.
But, you know, that doesn't stop people like, oh, you know, you said you should be dropped. Well, no. But, you know, I think it's great that he's scoring, you know, and 8 shots in the game, which was, like, phenomenal. I mean, 4 shots on target. So that's, like, more than anybody had in the entire Euros qualifying campaign, except David McGoldrick, who had 5. And that was 11 matches. McGoldrick didn't play
in this one game, he had more shots than anyone had in total in that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few players who had 4 shots on target across the 11-match Euro qualifying series. I'm including the Slovakia playoff. 120-minute Slovakia playoff in that as well. There was a couple of players who had 4, but only David McGoldrick had 5, and Robinson had 4 in one game against Azerbaijan, which was good, 2 of which obviously went in. So this is great. And then Agbene scored at the end as well, which looked like a great moment for the team. You know, you could see everyone was really happy for him. Parrott nearly scored. Like, he was on the pitch for 1 minute and almost scored. So, like, by the end, it had sort of... I mean, obviously, Azerbaijan were a bad team when they were in Dublin. You know, they made so many basic mistakes.
I mean, I thought I mentioned this, but that's fine. Listen,
yeah, but
we move on.
But they're a bad team who scored a great goal, and even, you know, even a bad team can then present an obstacle when you're trying to when you're goal down.
And that was why the early goal was so important on at both ends of the field. Like they had to come out and play a bit. You know, even though the next 20 minutes weren't brilliant for us, we had got the goal that we probably thought we were going to spend at least 75 minutes trying to score. We'd got it within 7 minutes.
It was also nice to score an absolute screamer. Yeah. This is the kind of goal that we thought we might see more of in the Stephen Kenny Ray, nice passing football. I started with Matt Doherty, who I thought was brilliant again.
Yeah,
has been again for a while for Ireland.
Yeah.
He had the ball in his own half. This is very early on in the move now. I mean, it didn't lead directly to it, but it was one of those ones where he shapes as if he's going to hoof it, and the attacker pressing him thinks that's going to happen, so he jumps up to the block, and then he just faints out the outside and off he goes. Like a really just Matt Doherty at his best, you know, empowering down the wing and all that kind of stuff. I thought he was brilliant for the goal. McLean was good for it. Obviously, just the finish was amazing. I was about to say, was the goalkeeper maybe a little bit of foot? But I feel like every screamer that's been scored in the last few weeks, I'm for some reason picking out holes in the goalkeeper's position. I just think Robinson said himself that he took it early, and that, you know, you catch the keeper off guard that way. He's not quite ready for it, and you know, it's just one of those ones slightly near post. But I think goalkeeper for this one. It was brilliant to score that kind of goal. The other thing I loved about the game was driving it home a little bit in the second half, and you know, we weren't. I was nervy a lot of the time, but also if I was from Azerbaijan, I would have been quite nervy at the fact that my Azerbaijanis could have conceded another bunch of goals, you know. So gotta be happy enough with all that, no?
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. So I mean, I was watching RT and Didi Hamann after the game. He seemed to get annoyed by Stephen Kenny's interview, where Kenny basically made the point. He's like, oh, you know, we're on a run of like one defeat in seven now.
Mm.
And then Hamann was like, oh, you know, you can't be doing that. Like, you know, basically, this guy has just won his first competitive game after trying at the 13th time of asking. And now he's telling us how great the record is. You know, get back in your box was the seemed to be the attitude. But I kind of thought, well, like, of course he's going to point out something good that's happening at this point. You know, having every game almost that we've played, it's been like, oh, is this guy the right guy?
Literally in this exact scenario for the last 18 months, he's been asked, when do you think the win's going to come?
And
you know? It's like when the win when the competitive win finally comes, I think he's well within his rights to say, okay, it hasn't actually been as bad as all of these post-match interviews would seem to suggest.
Yeah. And even in that one, like Tony Donahue had asked a question along the lines of, oh, do you think this will help to calm some of the debate over you? And and you could see him get visibly annoyed by that and go, I don't care about that, and start to talk about what he's doing. But of course, he has to care about it because, like,
if you care about the job,
you lose the job otherwise. You know what I mean? Yeah. Exactly. So he's saying, this is all bullshit and it shouldn't affect me, but it does ultimately affect him if they decide not to renew his contract, you know, because of all this stuff that's going on. But I'm sure that he is going to get his contract renewed at this point.
Like, well, Hamann is so impressed. I find Hamann's role interesting at the moment because he seems to be doing a lot of Ireland games. So we have this guy in the outsider role, you know, free to speak truth about Irish football and put everyone in their box. Mm. And he certainly does that with Stephen Kenny. You know, even before the game, he was talking about it as a must win, have to win, or he should be sacked, basically, is what he said, which he's kind of been saying similar things over the last couple of games. Then we win and he's impressed up to the point that the interview happens, and then suddenly he's down on Stephen Kenny again. And also he did make a point, I think it might have even been before the interview was played, that it's not enough for that win alone isn't enough for Didi Hamann to say that Stephen Kenny should be kept in the job, you know. But I actually do think it's probably enough to quell that thing for now.
Well,
is it? I mean,
like, what is the thing? Like, I mean, you heard the fans singing. Like,
yeah. You know? Oh no, like I've never said on this show that he should get sacked or that he should be out of the job. But
at the end of this campaign, that everyone fudges it a bit.
Yeah.
And I was about to do it there myself, going, like, you know, he's obviously in the job to the end of the campaign. Yeah, that's true. Of course that's true now.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you give him a new contract at the end of that campaign? Well, that's the question.
Yeah, like as of right now, yes. But you know, you do have to I think if you say he's gonna have the campaign, then we should assess it at the end of the campaign. And there's still Luxembourg away, and you know, if there's a really bad result there, then I think absolutely the questions will be asked again. Portugal at home is kind of, you know, that's a different game. You know, the result obviously could be a lot worse against Portugal at home, but
I mean, because Portugal are probably in a situation where they need to win the game, right? Because
they're 2 points ahead of Serbia now.
They're ahead, yeah, but
yeah,
you know, they might be in a position of needing to win to stay ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's going to be an interesting.
And again,
game.
You know, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world either. Do you know what I mean? Kenny has gotten good performances out of us, out of the team playing against good teams. So, I mean, all of up until last Saturday, I think, you know, all of our best performances have been against the better teams. So, I think it's just. It's just easier for us all to sit back at the end of the campaign and say, but as of right now, he deserves another contract, absolutely.
That might be, you know, aiming for utopia, but that is the way I am. I'm a little bit stupid regarding this type of thing. I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
Richie,
God.
How are we feeling this morning?
I just watched the goal set to the Titanic music, and it really works. Oh, it really, really works.
I think this is the most fun we're ever going to have in a podcast.
I don't want to get into a war of words.
I don't want to get into a war of words.
It's good, isn't it? There's a guy.
You might remember Alan Ferns.
Did you remember Alan Ferns?
Yeah,
red-haired guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Alan Ferns had a fight once in the Guinness swimming pool dressing room.
On Watling Street there.
Fraser and Ali in another incarnation when they were both young, and I guess I was too.
Reverend Jesse Jackson, you're very welcome to the show.
For the few people resist publicly, he cast a light to lit up our pathway.
30 million watched the fight.
What?
Yes, that's true. I was better known in Africa than I was in Ireland.
It's unbelievable.
He threw a hair dryer, I think, at David Beckham in the... Is that right?
No.
So I had this weird thing where I was always the same weight as my age.
Holy shit, Kenan Murph, it's US Murph. Round of applause for US Murph. That's him.
Kehoe's, right? Upstairs at Kehoe's.
Kehoe's, everyone, but that's fine.
Oh, my word. Oh. Tell us, talk us through that, Steve. I think we know what's happened, but talk us through it.
Oh, just saying. Sig Thorsen is the only.
Oh my God.
Fair to say, anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not.
It was about 12. Everyone in the city knew about it, but no one had seen him.
Look how happy I was. What the fuck happened? No, really. What happened? What happened?
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Dion Fanning, hello from Berlin. How are you?
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
It's going fine. Gavin Cooney, hello there. How are you?
Hey, Owen. All good.
I presume everyone's feeling great now. A win, a competitive win, Gavin. What a feeling this is.
And a competitive win, and also Ireland's biggest competitive win of any kind, home or away, in terms of margin since we beat Gibraltar in 2015.
What do you take away from it? Is it literally just the fact that we won the game? What pleased you most about Saturday night?
The fact that Ireland scored first. I think that was the defining fact of the game. We saw when Ireland don't score first against Azerbaijan, how difficult we make it for ourselves. We saw that in Dublin last month. And ironically, Ireland have played fairly well, I think, in the away games in this qualification group so far, in tough games away to Serbia and Portugal. That first half was as bad as they've been on the road this year. It's results business, as they say, and Callum Robinson's individual quality obscured the collective failings of that first half, and Ireland went in 2-0 up, and then were much better in the second half. They got more control of the ball. It helped by the fact that Azerbaijan are no great shakes, as we say, and they won 3-0, but honestly, it should have been 6.
What about that, Dion? I mean, the fact that, I don't know how much it would have mattered if we just stumbled across the line to a 1-0 win or whatever, but the fact that we... had a half time to think about a 2-0 lead and yet came out and built on that. I mean, look, you know, it was far from perfect, but I don't think there's ever going to be a perfect performance from this Ireland team. But in terms of what Stephen Kenny's looking for from them, you know, even from Callum Robinson's goal, I thought, which was, RTÉ had done a package pre-match where they showed a lot of the goals of the Stephen Kenny era, and a lot of them look very similar to goals that would have been scored in previous eras. Whereas this one had his fingerprints, had his philosophy all over it, and the fact that built on that then the second half.
Yeah, I think it's a result that is as significant too for just what the conversation it creates around the team, or or how it changes the conversation around the team. Because clearly those of us who feel that Stephen Kenny is building something and needs time, it becomes more wearing if you keep saying it after a bad result or a disappointing result. Although I would still be saying it if there had been a disappointing result. But the fact that there's a good result and you have encouraging performances from individuals as well, I think that's a key thing, that Robinson played the way he did, gave Ireland a sense that, you know, like this sense of Ireland missing chances. Like it's such a such an alien concept to watch Ireland, you know, racking up these chances and, you know, creating chances, and all this sort of sense of a striker who's coming off the field disappointed not to have got a hat trick. I think that's an important thing, because that's an area where Ireland struggles. That's an area where Ireland has always struggled. So that is an encouraging thing. I think the significance is in terms of Kenny's own, like everyone wants to kind of have a conversation which isn't about Stephen Kenny, but at the same time, it's kind of false, because the minute anything goes wrong, it's straight back to that. So I think when something goes well, and when Ireland, and I agree with Gavin, I think the first half performance, probably because of scoring early, I think things changed as well. Like there's a lack of, still a lack of real conviction there, and you know they drop off and let Azerbaijan come onto them. But I think because of it was necessary for a good convincing win, just to make people believe that there is something in what Stephen Kenny is doing.
Yeah, Gavin, you wrote a great piece of analysis about this, just tracing the evolution of what Stephen Kenny is doing. And let's just say, like, I mean, it's not any one thing. I mean, he's kind of been shape-shifting pretty regularly ever since taking the job.
This is what really annoys me about a lot of the criticism toward Kenny. Like, it's people just judging him on what he said before he took the job, and that kind of bold and starry-eyed idealism, rather than watching about what he's actually been doing at the pitch. I think Tony Cascarino summed it up when he said, with Stephen Kenny, I just see an idea, and the idea is so perfect that there is no debate. Cascarino also suggested that Shane Duffy should be relocated as our central striker in that diagnosis. Things have changed completely. So, like, he started off... Ireland played 4-3-3 in his first games against Bulgaria and Finland. These were the days of the bold idealism, where he talked about, we'll dominate the possession. I won't compromise on that. Like, Ireland played 500 passes in each of those games, but were sliced open too easily in midfield. Then they went to a kind of a 4-2-3-1 from Slovakia onwards. They never really got any rhythm out of that. And I think the reason for that is just that was when Ireland lost all those players to injuries and COVID cases and so forth. And now it's changed again. Like, Stephen Kenny was asked, because we've talked about this on the show before, you know, when you list off our best players, it always felt like, God, a three at the back might actually be the best idea here, just because it would get more of our best players on the pitch at the same time. Kenny, I remember his very first press conference back in 2020 when he got the job. He was asked about that. Would you play a three at the back? And he said, look, I'm not wedded to any one system, but the subtext was clear when he said, I've never really played it throughout my managerial career so far. And lo and behold, it's upon that rock in which he's built this qualification campaign. There's been changes throughout. Like, it was a 3-5-2 against Serbia. It's become more of a, Kenny says it's like a 3-4-2-1 since. And you do wonder, that's more like how Chelsea play. So you do wonder how influential Anthony Barry has been on that.
I mean, completely. I mean, his fingerprints are all over that, surely. I mean, it's the Chelsea system, and it is Anthony Barry's idea.
Yeah, and just but Ireland have become a more counter-attacking team. Like, they don't actually dominate the ball anymore. Like, in 2020, they were averaging 509 passes a game. That's dropped to less than 400 now. They're playing, if you just look at, I won't bore you too much with stats, but if you look at like their number of passes they play for every time they play, they have the ball, they have possession, they're averaging one less pass per possession than they were last year. They're hitting more balls long than they were in 2020. Now, they're still hitting fewer long balls than they were under O'Neill or McCarthy, but everything is a lot, there's a lot more variation and there's a lot more pragmatism. So, like, when everyone moans about, oh, you just need to mix it up or put them under pressure or we need to be a bit more pragmatic, he has been pragmatic. And you could see that on Saturday night. Like, they went long a lot of the time. You know, Ireland's third most frequent passing exchange was between Bazunu and Adam Ida. He only played two passes short to one of his three centre backs in the whole game. Now, we sat down with Kenny at the hotel the day before the match, and that morning, and he was great. Chatted away for half an hour on loads of different things and talked about how Azerbaijan, their main strength was the fact that they just flooded numbers back behind the ball really quickly. They just put eight players behind between the ball and their own goal. So I think the fact that Ireland were knocking it along was just to going to get it forward quickly and don't give Azerbaijan the time to gather back. So it just goes to show how they are cutting their cloth to suit each match. So there's a lot more, I think there's really a lot more pragmatism than he's been given credit for so far.
So, but you know, I mean, pragmatism wasn't the plan. I mean, you know, is the implication of this that Stephen Kenny's sold us a bill of goods? That, you know, and actually it turns out to be quite different from what he was offering. You know, he's like, what do you mean steamed clams? It was always going to be steamed hams. That's
yeah, look, he has kind of repudiated his own early days idealism. There's absolute truth to that, like, and I think he's also realized that the young players that he's been bringing through from the 21s, they're not all ready, you know? So, like, Bazunu, Amabamadele, O'Shea, Knight, Ida have all done well. Malumbi, Parrott and Connolly have not done so well. So he has brought more experienced players back into the mix. But, you know, this isn't, like, while we haven't taken this giant revolutionary step forward, but we've not, sorry, I keep saying we, I shouldn't say we, Ireland haven't taken a step back either. Like, there's a lot more variation in attack, and they just look well coached. And I think that was best encapsulated in the first goal that we scored and James McLean. So McLean gets the ball in midfield, he shuffles it onto his left foot as he has to do, and then what you're expecting is sprint to the byline and put a cross into the box, because we've been watching that for 10 years. But instead he played a really, really good pass infield to Robinson, and Robinson said after the game,
it's honestly one of the best things I've ever seen him, one of the best things I've seen James McLean do in an Ireland shirt.
It was just, I've never seen him so cerebral on the pitch, you know? So, and then obviously Robinson had a lot to do and that was an absolutely brilliant finish. But they look more better coached. There's more variation in attack. They seem to be equipped with specific game plans for every game. Now, you can argue whether the game plans are right. You can argue whether Stephen Kenny is as soulless a pup. I don't think he has, in terms of his early days idealism. But I really don't think to turn around and say Kenny is too idealistic and he's trying to play a game in which the players aren't able to play. Well, he's completely changed how he's played. And he's said that himself. He said that after the game on Saturday night, we've brought in a new system of play from March onwards and it suits the players more.
Yeah, a cerebral James McLean. That's just a phrase I never thought I'd hear.
Went out the window in the second half as well. You know, he'd run 70 yards to get into the box and you're thinking, just square it for Adam Ida. And then he obviously took
I'm giving James McLean that one. I don't care. I know everyone was screaming at him to pass the ball, but, you know, does anyone remember Mo Salah's assist against Man City? Nah, already half forgotten. What you remember is slaloming past players and banging it into the goals, which James McLean so nearly did, but didn't happen from... Dion, do you agree with Gav's basic point there, that there's actually been way more variation and that Kenny isn't as dogmatic as pretty much everyone... I'm interested here, Gavin, make this point, because pretty much everyone else, whether they're supporting Kenny or not, hasn't actually really dug into it as much as Gavin appears to have done. Do you agree with his analysis?
Well, I agree with his piece. When, you know, Gavin has the stats and that demonstrates what he's saying, and I think it's a very valid point. I think, like, my view on Stephen Kenny and what he's trying to do isn't so much that he's wedded to something. Now, I think he probably has recognized that he's not going to be allowed sort of experiment forever, and the pressure probably has necessitated an adjustment. And as Gavin says, because players haven't developed, as some of them haven't come through as quickly as he'd liked. But there's also a fact, which is, I think, one of the things Kenny is trying to get, and this entirely fits in with a pragmatic approach, is that getting players to believe they can do something. They can play football. They don't have to do it. They don't always have to be trying to do it. But the ideologues were the managers who came before. Like, we've talked about this in the past, but the ideologues were the managers who told Irish players that you can't do this, you can't take risks, you can't play football, we don't have the players. So a manager who says we have the players, but we don't always have to do the purest, most aesthetically pleasing demonstration of our abundant gifts, is still believing in the players in a way that managers previously may not have done. And whether, long ball, who said long ball, no such thing as long ball, short ball, just the right ball. And you know, that's what I think good managers do. And I think it's been essential for Kenny that he's evolved, as Gavin's demonstrated. But I think it's also the right thing to do to recognize that there are times when you need to play in different ways. But I think the fundamental point that he is trying to get across is that if Ireland have to play, and again, there will be matches at home, I think the next step is a game like Azerbaijan, where you actually want at home, where you want to actually, you're going to have possession, and Ireland need to have possession, and they need to use that constructively to break down a team. And there are the stages when you would hope to see the Kenny philosophy kind of creating a sense of self-belief in the players in terms of not panicking or not becoming impatient when it takes some time, say, to break a team down.
Yeah, are we in danger of overpraising Stephen Kenny here and the team a little bit for one win, one competitive win in 13 attempts, Dion? It sounds like we might be.
Against a team that were 115th, 116th in the world. Well, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. And I think we're entitled to kind of enjoy it. I think it is something that I think on the back of, I think the Serbia game clearly was a bit of Ireland were slightly lucky, extremely lucky in some ways. Although Gavin Bazunu is in goals to stop goals going in, so that he did his job. But I think that result, and then add this result onto that, gives people some sense that there's something happening. And the key thing in those matches, and this is the important thing as well, and this is what Kenny is doing differently as well. The key, if you look at the Serbia game, people came away from that thinking there are players there that we're excited to see. Then you go into the Azerbaijan game and you get Callum Robinson's performance, and that layers on another player, another sense of, okay, there's something happening here, albeit in a game that nearly every Ireland team throughout history would be expected to win. But it does just builds up this sense that there is something being built, and I think that's important. I think that's always been the thing that's been most important from this stage of the Stephen Kenny reign. And I think especially, I do feel with COVID and with the way things went during that period, that it's very harsh to judge a manager during that time, because it was such a surreal, forgettable time of football everywhere. And I think it's very hard for any manager to be judged on what happened during those games.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, especially when you're actually trying to start off in that empty, there's nobody there. It should be this kind of exciting time and everyone's waiting to see what happens, and you got the response from the crowd and there's actually just nobody. It was really terrible to have to try to start in those circumstances. But I just wonder what, just on something that you said a few minutes ago, Gav, I shouldn't say we, Why shouldn't you say we?
Oh, all because, you know, journalistic dispassion and neutrality and so on, that I shouldn't be referring to Ireland as we rather than as Stephen Kenny. And
it's interesting though, isn't it? Because I mean, it is something that unconsciously I'm sure I do quite a lot. I don't know, to be honest. Someone would probably know better than I do.
I'm sure you say we. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It kind of is
we, you know, I mean, and it would be a bit weird if we were talking about like Chelsea Spurs and I started talking about we for one of the teams. That might be a bit strange. But for Ireland, you know, we're sitting here, you know, Steve Snowden famously said, we're all Irish. you know, this is our team, like that we're sort of stuck with for better or for worse. So, you know, is we unacceptably not objective?
Yeah, sorry, I'm saying that because, and I suppose the wrong thing, I'm too aware of my Twitter mentions. There is definitely a perception that some journalists are too closely aligned and too firmly believing in what Stephen Kenny is doing and the style of play, and it's just, you know, a generational gap. Because I do think that part of the criticism of Stephen Kenny that he's been getting is people having a problem with growing old and just recognizing that the game has moved on.
Yeah, yeah. And your colleague Paul Fantasy wrote an interesting piece about this where he said, he pointed out that while former players often are reluctant to harshly criticize, you know, their recently colleagues, who maybe are struggling in managerial positions, you know, whatever, we can all think of examples, and often journalists are more harsh. In this case, it seems to the manager seems to have more support from journalists than a lot of the ex-players who have been fairly harsh, and suggested maybe this has something to do with the ex-players feeling insulted, kind of implicitly insulted, that like to say this is going to be better, or we're trying to move into the 21st century here football-wise, suggests that what they were doing was no good.
Yeah, no, it was very good. It made me think that a lot of the... Because Kenny's appointment was so attached to these ideas of, you know, breaking, in Kenny's own words, breaking our reliance with that British style and moving things on. It's understandable that the people who are critical of that feel that they're being criticised as being stuck in the past and, you know, superannuated and so on. And as Fenno said in that piece, like quoted Andy Townsend really well in that interview with Paul Kimmage, to say that Jack Charlton at the time was actually quite progressive and quite had a great clarity of what he was doing, in the sense that Ireland didn't have a number 10 like Maradona, and we also had the 86 World Cup, so we had to effectively play over them and press them. And that was in its way quite brave and revolutionary at the time. But the game has moved on, and like teams have to have an ability to play out from the back, to the point like the rules have changed, the literal rules of the game have changed to allow that, because you're now allowed to have two players inside your own penalty area for goal kicks to encourage that short passing. So yeah, the game has moved on, and Ireland really need to start moving with it.
What do you think of that, Dion? Ex-players are irate at this implied insult to their honour.
Yeah, I think there's potentially something in that, but I also do feel that what you're actually just seeing as well is a demonstration of how constituencies work in football, and how networks work in football as much as anywhere else. And I would say that journalists, Irish football journalists who cover League of Ireland, who knew Stephen Kenny, who like Stephen Kenny in many instances, which is not somehow to say that journalists aren't being objective, but I think everyone wants Ireland managers to do well anyway. But I think it's probably an instance where people feel that he is an ambassador and for the League of Ireland in some ways as well, and the constituency of players who find themselves on television talking about games and find themselves doing columns come from. The old network, if you like, in the sense of they are, you know, a lot of them are players who would have who went to England early, who don't have that alignment with Stephen Kenny. And, you know, it is the thing that Stephen Kenny has always, in certain quarters, has had to kind of stand up and sort of prove that he is a manager from the League of Ireland who can actually manage at international level. So I think there is, I think that is one of the factors at play too, that he has his constituency is supporting him is different, and his and these people and players, ex-players, possibly feel that there is a lack of. I'm not so sure they would feel that their own legacy is being attacked, because I think all Ireland players would be aware, or lots of them would have felt, especially over the last 10 years, like maybe the Jack Charlton era is slightly different, but over the last 10 years that managers could have trusted more in the players. But I think there would be a sense of, well, you know, this is fantasy stuff. Like this idea that, you know, you can do this. This is not how the game operates at the level that we understand it to operate. And I think, you know, this is something you see. I've been struck at times by, you watch pundits, and it's an extraordinary intersection at times. Like, you know, and this is going beyond the Ireland thing. I've seen pundits on programs talking about players, you know, making very strong cases for players to get contract extensions, for example, and really strong, really speaking passionately, this player deserves a new contract at his club. And I remember recently being struck by this, going, oh, that's interesting. That's also kind of curious that this player would do this, or this ex-player would do this. And then you look and you see that the player whose contract is being urged to be extended by the club and the pundit share the same agent. This isn't happening in the Irish case, but there are a number of intersections in the media that are curious at times. And I think that in other sectors we'd be kind of more attuned to, or more alert to, kind of flagging them.
And just to jump in there briefly, Owen, Stephen Kenny has actually, I think, made a virtue of not having that constituency, because if you remember back in 2018 when O'Neill was gone, it was wondering, Steve Kenny was mentioned as being a contender. You know, we had lots of people talking in the press about how Mick McCarthy would be a safe pair of hands and put a smile back on Irish football and et cetera, et cetera. Kenny didn't because he managed the League of Ireland, he didn't have those ex-players and that level of representation. Maybe that's a stupid word to use in the press, but he came out and made the case for himself. He did a great interview with Emmett Malone in 2018 when he just answered a call and said, I am absolutely qualified, and ran through his record and accepted, I haven't managed in England, but I have managed in Europe. And I think Kenny got the job because John Delaney was aware of the public demand that Kenny would get the job. And I think that honesty and transparency really stood to him at that time.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And do you think, I mean, this is something that I've been thinking over the last week, especially with this, with the, you know, the Saudi takeover at Newcastle and the various really, really kind of repulsive aspects of that whole situation. These international games are, for a long time we've had this kind of attitude of, oh, here's an international break, oh, this is going to be boring. That actually these are going to be the best bits, kind of looking completely forward. Like this is kind of, you know, supporting this like mediocre team in this small country. You know, we're striving for mediocrity here, right? Maybe flashes of something slightly better than mediocrity is what we're hoping for. We'd be so happy if we managed to do that on any kind of consistent level. This is actually more interesting than following the Premier League, the Champions League. Like these, you know, the football is amazing, but like, if it's going to be Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates sort of duking it out for you know, there's nothing really very charming about this prospect.
It's amazing, isn't it, that there are fewer queasy moral issues around nationalism and geopolitics in international football at the moment than there are in club level. But I agree with you. But also because we're now at a stage where club football is the elite of club football is a de facto super league. You know, you've just got, you know, 10 or 12 super clubs walled off by virtue of their finances from the rest, and they're just trading players, you know, almost like NBA franchises. And, you know, that animates the discussion and drives the discussion, but it does get really boring and repetitive, and that cycle of who's in crisis this week and who's a genius and who's a fraud, and it's so defined by the money involved, and then you have to swallow so many kind of complex moral issues around it all. It becomes really wearing to follow it, and all the tribalism online and the utter like crap that is spouted online about it. Whereas international football is a nice wee break. The Euros were great. And this Irish team, like Dion said, there is something being built here. There are, you know, old stalwarts playing well again, but like young players are being infused. And also young players who represent a different and more modern Ireland, like a more diverse Ireland, which I think is actually quite an important part of why people are really tapping into this. Like I'm actually surprised to see the FAI say that there's only 4,000 tickets left for the Qatar game on Tuesday. Like I did think that would be a lonely night at the Aviva Stadium, but seemingly people are coming out.
Yeah, I like the idea of all that. I'm not so sure it holds in that part of all of us that it craves. Well, maybe I'll speak for myself. The part of me anyway that craves adrenaline and excitement. Like I'd love to say that, you know, we will detach, and you know, clearly what's happening at Newcastle is appalling, and it's instructive to watch the kind of how their supporters and people accommodate what they have to accommodate. And it's, you know, again, they're not the first club to have to do this, but there is like I think the international football, it would be nice to look at it like that, but I'm also thinking that like a week ago, Liverpool played Manchester City in a game that was thrilling and pulsating, and you watched it. I watched it thinking I don't want this game to end, and that will become more and more. That will still be there. That will still be there, and we will still park all our doubts and moral reservations when we get sucked up into those games. And yet it may be that, like, definitely the Irish, I definitely have a feel totally differently about international breaks now than I used to, partly because maybe I don't have to go on and cover Ireland all the time, but also because the international team is more interesting than the international team that went before. Not the club team that went before. It's like the Nations League. People, you know, the Nations League is a great addition to the football calendar, but it's a great addition to the football calendar because it's better than the international football that went before. And I think those things are important, but I do still feel that, you know, like a kind of, the, you know, the next sort of the next film in the Marvel chain or whatever, you know, those huge big budget encounters will still see us sucked in and sort of making some moral accommodation or parking our reservations for the duration of it, even though we become more and more aware of how impossible that is. And it's the same with the Champions League. When the Champions League enters quarterfinal, semi-final stages, it becomes kind of gripping again.
All right, we'll leave it there, guys. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much. We'll chat to you again soon. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
And Randolph sends it long.
That's his kind of size.
Shane Long. Shane Long's in behind the defence. Shane Long against Moyer.
Der Lungsfehler, Hector, und da ist das Tor! Die Iren führen mit 1-0 in der 70. Minute.
Frappe le but! Magnifique! Porté par un public en liesse, l'Irlande peut croire à l'exploit grâce à son super sub, Shane Long!
Shane Long!
OK, Ken, you might be in love with international football, but not everybody shares your passion for this purest form of the game.
Yeah. Tivo. We play a bit of Tivo here. This is Thibaut Courtois speaking after Belgium's 2-1 defeat by Italy in the fourth place playoff, which meant that Belgium finished fourth in the final four.
This game is just a money game, and we have to be honest about it. This game, we just play it because for the UEFA it's extra money and it's an extra game on TV. You know, for us, okay, it's a good game because it's against Italy, and for Italy it's a good game because it's against Belgium. But after you saw players and coach say, no, we want to play this game. Yeah, of course, everyone wants to play this game, but look, both teams, how much they changed. Other players played also from our side, you know, so if both teams would be in the final, it would have been other players playing. So this just shows that we played too many games. In June, again, four Nations League games. Why? Next year, we have a World Cup in November. We have to play maybe until the latter stages of June again. We will get injured, you know, and nobody cares about the players anymore. And we in June, after a long season, you will have to play four games in the Nations League again. You will have 3 weeks of holiday, and that's not enough for players to be able to continue 12 months of on the highest level. And if we never going to say anything, it's always the same. But yeah, then after they're against the Super League, but they just do the same. They just put extra games. They made an extra trophy in the in the conference cup or what the name is, you know, it's always the same. And they can be angry about other teams and wanting Super Leagues and everything, but they don't care about the players. They just care about their pockets, and that's a bad thing if players are not spoken about, you know. And then you hear that now they want to put a European Championship and a World Cup every year. Like, when will we get a rest? Never. So in the end, only top players will get injured and injured and injured. And then that's the end of it, you know. So that's something that should be much better and much more taken care of. We're not robots. It's just more and more games and less rest for us. And nobody cares about us. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, he has a point. Like, in terms of the expansion of the, or the, you know, he was talking at the end about the World Cup and Euros, you know, let's have them all the time. Like, let's just have a tournament every year. Mm. Let's put in more tournaments. Let's play every June. And that is crazy. Yeah, it's terrible. But I mean, my argument about international football isn't really this. I mean, it is clearly a problem. The sort of expansion and sort of encroachment of the calendar. Although, remember that it's not just international football that's doing this. I mean, the Champions League is egregiously doing this with their Swiss system, this awful idea that they have, and which is going to add a bunch of Champions League games into the calendar. Obviously, the Super League was an attempt to do this, I mean, which Courtois referred to there. But you still have, it's still the case that the international game, which the other sort of thing about the international football and why Thibaut and the like might be kind of going, really, that's is the clearly the financial situation. I mean, these players are like, you know, student athletes or whatever we call
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they don't, they're not making any money out of it. I mean, they're making some money, but it's negligible compared to their real job. Yeah. The real job is club football. It's kind of, oh, this extra stuff, and there's a lot of emotional blackmail attached. Like, oh, hang on, people are, and I'm sure lots of them are kind of like, oh, really, this is sort of a bit dull. They do have the option of retiring, but like, then that leads to them becoming hate figures in their country.
Yeah,
so you know, Stephen Ireland or whatever,
a few quid on in the long run as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So like, they're kind of stuck a little bit. But what I mean really is that, you know, leaving all those concerns to one side for a moment, is that this is a kind of a level of the sport which isn't just determined by money. It's not just the outcome is not being decided by it. Like, it isn't just about like who's going to be taken over by like a billionaire and how the fans are able to like justify it to themselves. You know, like it's all this kind of nonsense. And it's more about like players development, you know, team chemistry, football matches, that sort of stuff.
It's kind of weird that he's saying it after a Nations League game as well, because like the Nations League has kind of worked.
The Nations League is better than the kind of boring friendlies that just used to happen.
Like, I mean, the really terrible things about international football, you know, has been these terrible friendlies that no one cares about, and seven subs and eight subs and all the rest. Like, they have kind of fixed that now, and international football is pretty good.
Yeah.
And you can, so like from our point of view, from like the an observer's point of view, all that Ken says is absolutely right.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it is kind of hard to see where the...
It is sort of built on like a, you know, a house...
Just
like
get back in goal, Thibaut.
Come on, Thibaut, you know, but this is about your country. Also, this is about like, Belgium.
Maybe if you were playing left back, you know, I'd take these arguments on board. But come on, Thibaut. You're stealing a living in there.
That's enough football chat. Let's talk synth.
That team chain brings me back in. Aztec gold.
Good guy.
Oh my God. Can somebody turn the treble up even more?
If I can change.
Answers please in a postcard to Saints and Greavesy, Littlewoods Cup competition.
We don't have enough treble on this thing.
We're going to have more shows from Berlin right through the week. To hear them, of course, you're going to have to be a member. And you can join up on secondcaptains.com for just a fiver a month. Plus VAT, we have got original listener compositions flooding in. We're going to save those for later in the week. But people have also been suggesting synth classics to play out the shows with. And we're going to hand you over now to
who could be possibly asked, though?
Exactly. If only we had a synth lord here at this very...
Do you have synth
table.
Royalty in the apartment anywhere?
Synth royalty.
Mm.
Ken.
So I'm supposed to just name the song that we play?
Well, but you're also... A little bit of background wouldn't go astray. I mean, you know, the key themes covered by the artist in question, how this song kind of sums up much of what they wanted to say throughout their musical careers.
Yeah, that kind of thing, Murph. Just deep background is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Is there anything else? You know, I mean, that'll do for now, I suppose, you know? But, oh, I mean, your own personal relationship with this musical composition. I'd kind of like to hear some of that as well. When you first heard it, how deeply it affected you on subsequent re-listens.
Or just play the banger. Just play the tune.
Either
you could do that either.
Well, we are in Germany. We're in...
North Berlin.
We're in North... The little spoken about North Berlin.
It's so bougie, isn't it? It is a very nice area. Can I just say, it's a very nice area. All you North Berliners.
Yeah. I look forward to walking into downtown Berlin with you afterwards, Murph.
Apparently, check it all out. It's going to be a delightful stroll. I'm going to stroll down Unter den Linden with you in just a few minutes on.
It's weird. Because we're here, I guess I think it makes sense to play a bit of Kosmischer Läufer.
Oh.
The Secret Cosmic Music of the East German Olympic Program, 1972-83, Volume 3.
Oh, wasn't this... This is this debunked story that we did from last time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really that. They didn't... The East Germans did not actually hire a guy to create futuristic sounding music for their athletes to train to. He just pretended that he was doing that and as a kind of a creative, aid. Yeah.
And made some good tunes.
Yeah, including In der Stadt und auf dem Land, which is, I guess, in town and in the country.
Yeah.
To play us out. It's Kosmischer Läufer.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Murph. Great to see you guys. Oh, I missed you.
Thanks, Ken. It is great to be able to say this to you in person. Thank you both.
Thank you both. Dankeschön.
Thanks for listening.
That's the second time he's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.